Good bread, good meat. Good gosh, here comes the colonel.
Ah, yes, right here, the Canadians running wild. Welcome back to the second half hour, The Promise of Tomorrow. I'm your host, I'm Colonel Mason. We want to get right back to our guest, Professor Larry Snyder, the program director at the Masters in Cybersecurity Management at BayPath College in Massachusetts. When we left at the first half hour, we were talking about the dangers of the social media, of Yahoo groups and Facebook and LinkedIn and all the others. And Larry's got a plan how we can protect ourselves, so I want to get right back to that. And then Harry Croteau is going to stop in. He summers every year in England, and he's at the town where Virginia Woolf committed suicide. It's kind of fun to hear from him, too. So right now, let's step over here to our fountain of useless information for today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help
you? Oh, yes, we've aroused the spirit of the fountain by throwing in the coins. Okay, oh, spirit of the fountain, jog your memory, ha-ha, with this one. I know you're used to a lot of water, but think a little bit of beer, huh? What canine did Anheuser-Busch dub the original party animal? What was the name of Anheuser-Busch's original party animal,
I have given you my answer. Now you may tell me.
The spirit of the fountain remembers the old Anheuser-Busch commercials with the original party animal. And his name was? Well, Spuds McKenzie, of course. All right, back to our guest.
Man, let's go to town.
Okay, the Science News studio band taking us back to our interview with Larry Snyder. We were talking about the dangers of social media for all of us, and most especially our kids. So how do we protect our young people from doing this sort of thing? When you talk about them being so open, for instance, the marathon bomber in Boston recently, they got into his computer, looked at a bunch of stuff, and finally led to, through association to some guy down in Florida that was arrested and brought into the police station, and the police killed him. Now, we don't know the circumstances, or at least I don't, but that was interesting about how that network led to somebody else, a thousand miles away. But isn't there that danger with everybody who's using these, sharing information blindly on the Internet, and how do we protect our kids from this?
Yeah, we talk about this as we're developing. Incidentally, we're also developing an undergraduate program here at BayPath. They don't have an undergraduate program in cybersecurity, but what we're trying to do here is build what we're calling a pipeline, a K-18 pipeline, where we start talking about in the public schools the importance of protecting yourself when you go onto the Internet or go onto social networking sites. It's the same as giving health class, right? You give health class to kids in fourth grade, sixth grade, eighth grade to teach them about the things that they need to protect themselves as they grow older. This is part of their life. And if this should be built into the elementary and the high school curriculum, age appropriate, of course, to begin to teach them about things that they're going to need to know as they grow and mature. It's unlikely that they're not going to have some exposure to social networking sites by the time they reach fourth grade. I have the friends of our family and professionally that have kids that have Facebook accounts and other social networking accounts that are 10 years old or are carrying around cell phones when they're 8 years old. Don't we have a responsibility at some point to start teaching about ethical use and protective use of stuff of this technology to children? So we're looking at creating this K-18 pipeline, K through graduate school, kindergarten through graduate school, of teaching them social awareness and the appropriate way to use technology and the risks associated with it. Not as a scare tactic, but as an educational tactic, same as they do with health class, same as they do with physical activity, same basic concept, but it's got to be introduced.
Larry, I'm so glad that you brought that up. That is something that has been bothering me personally. I know it bothers a lot of the listeners because we get comments about this just constantly. People talking about the security on the internet, and there's some real worries right now about what's happening with the younger generation and blindly using the social media and then getting hurt with it. So I'm really impressed that you're working on that. Could you put the meditation cap on for just a minute? Kind of look down the line, maybe 5 years or 10 years or something. Give us kind of a peek into the future. What do you see lying ahead for us?
Well, I think that, you know, as I think about this field, I think that, you know, our biggest concern right now is again, it's going to be learning how to control behavior. You look at all this great, exciting stuff. You got the Google Glass coming out. What an opportunity. What technology is fantastic. But we need to understand that we have to put some things in place. We have to start teaching ourselves to be a little bit more of security aware. So what's in the future? You know, I hate to say it, but it's hard to predict. But I can imagine a very chaotic situation. You know, hard to articulate at this point.
Chaotic situation. Woody doody 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 do. You're not going to elaborate on that anymore, huh?
Hard to say where we're going to go with it. It's just it's an exciting time for everybody, and I love being in this field because I get to see it all, I get to digest it all. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to come back and talk in a couple of years and see where we're at.
Sounds good to me. You've got my contact information. Anytime you get something to talk about, you please ring me up and let me know, because I'll love to have you back on. You've just been a wonderful guest. And before we get out of here, do you have a word of wisdom for us, something you learned late in life, or something you'd like to pass on to people, some way you'd like to be remembered? What profound idea do you have for us?
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but you got to be careful who you trust, right? You know, I ran across this little saying of a little cartoon, a dog sitting in front of a computer says, on the internet, no one knows that you're really a dog. You have to be aware of what you're doing.
All right. Larry Snyder, Program Director of the newly created Masters in Cybersecurity Management at Bay Path College. That's right near Springfield, Massachusetts. Going to be showing off the stuff that the Bay Path has at the IEEE 2013 International Conference on Homeland Security. It's going on November the 12th through the 14th. Information on that conference can be seen at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Larry, thanks so much for being with us, and I meant what I said. Please stay in touch and get back to us when you have some updates. Will you do that?
Great, absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right, at this time, we have a very special treat. We have with us an old friend, and if you've listened to this program at any amount of time, you recognize the name Harry Croteau. Harry has been with us before, and those of you who have not met Harry as of yet know him as the Nobel laureate who shared the Nobel Prize with Robert Curl and Rick Smalley when they discovered carbon-60 and launched the modern age of nanotechnology. It was so good to have you back with us, Harry.
My pleasure.
Now, we caught up with you, I guess, in the UK. Are you in London?
Well, south of London. We during the summer, 3 months, were based in Europe, particularly in a small town called Lewes, which is famous for several things. The first thing, the first dinosaur fossil recognized was found here.
Oh.
The second thing is that Virginia Woolf committed suicide in the river here. And the third thing, more important for the USA, is Thomas Paine spent several years here developing his radical ideas, which, as you know, were extremely important in the revolution, and his impact on such things as the Bill of Rights, and also his words and writings were used by Washington to spur on the American troops during the War of Independence. So we here in Lewes feel that we made a massive contribution to the birth of the United States of America.
Well, I guess so. Thomas Paine got his ideas when he was in Lewes. Is it L-E-W-I-S or L-O-U-I-S?
L-E-W-E-S.
L-E-W-E-S. Wonderful. And
year-old town, which is steeped in history, and certainly was a place where many radical changes in humanitarian contributions and things like this were made to in Britain, but also to the way democracy was developed in the Western world.
And Virginia Woolf committed suicide in the river there in Lewis, you say?
There's a river. She lived very close to Lewis, which just a couple of miles down the road.
I see. All right. Well, did your wife, Margaret, tell me that before you go back to the Florida State University that you're going to be going to the Balkans?
We've been there. We go there quite regularly, but one is that we'll go to Croatia and Slovenia, but also to Germany before we go back in about 2 weeks' time to Florida State.
I can understand you're going to Germany. There's such an area of great learning, but I'm kind of surprised about Slovenia and Croatia. What's going on there?
These are very famous places. Croatia is where an institute called Ruđer Bošković was a place of research. Ruđer Bošković was really quite an eminent scientist and was in fact one of the first people to consider something very similar to the chemical bond in chemistry. Fundamental to chemistry is how atoms stick together. And in the case of Slovenia, Stefan Boltzmann, some of the very famous names in statistics and thermodynamics come from these places. So many countries in Europe have made major contributions to science at a very fundamental level.
The students can access Vega Science, and they can also Google GSET, is that right?
GEOSET. GEOSET. If you Google GEOSET, GEOSET, you will get our websites right at the top, wherever you are in the world. Yeah, it's turned out to be a very good title for this, because we're right at the top, and you can see our students making presentations. It's brilliant.
All right, that sounds absolutely brilliant to me. Something else I want to catch up on, when I spoke with you last time, a number of your friends in science were working on splitting water and extracting the hydrogen, and I get asked about that all the time. Are we looking for a hydrogen future for our energy needs?
Oh, it's a big problem. There certainly are a number of people working on these, and I think the big breakthrough still has to be made. I mean, certainly theoretically, it doesn't look impossible, and certainly some people are making progress, but the big breakthrough, which would really ensure that we have sufficient energy in the future to support the level of technology that we now have in place, that's still not there. We're still definitely reliant on fossil fuels for the foreseeable future. And until the big breakthrough, which would be to split water efficiently, is achieved, we certainly are looking to serious problems at some time in the future, because the whole of our society technology is absolutely dependent on the voracious use of energy. The lights, you only have to look at the cars on the road in various cities like Houston and Los Angeles, and then think about it in London and Munich and Delhi and Beijing, and sort of contemplate a future in which the cost of fuel must rise in the end, and must obviously be limited, because we're using roughly a million years worth of fossil fuel every year. I mean, it took a million years to create the fossil fuel that we use in 1 year, and so that's, I mean, very simple arithmetic indicates that that cannot go on forever. There are other problems. A lot of ethanol now is coming from biological sources, and in fact it's reducing the amount of food, that's available, and a quarter of the world is starving. So these sorts of things need to be looked at very carefully. But until the big problem is solved, I hope it will be solved, but it's proving difficult. But a lot of scientists are really working hard to solve this problem. And the scientific community is taking this problem seriously, much more seriously, I would say, than politicians and other members of society, because I don't think they appreciate just how serious the situation really is. I mean, the oil companies are finding oil here, there, everywhere, but, you know, if we're talking about 5 or 10 years, that's one thing, but if we're talking about 100 years from now, I think we've got big sustainability issues to address.
Well, one of our listeners asked me the other day why we don't use these wind farms and these solar farms to create the electricity to just split water and capture the hydrogen. Why is that not economical?
Well, because there's just not enough energy at the moment. I mean, I think this isn't my area, but I'm just guessing that the wind farms, if you think about them, building one of those things is extremely expensive. One has to work out whether the cost of building one of these windmills, how long it takes to produce the energy that was used to build it. This is the same sort of calculation that is required in the case of fission. When you're talking about nuclear energy, the cost of a nuclear reactor is colossal. You know, they don't grow on trees. The amount of energy involved in the concrete, they're massive amounts of energy required, and they take a long time to actually produce the amount of energy that was required in building them. The wind farms are certainly quite expensive, and I have not looked into this recently, but if they really were very efficient at creating electricity, then I think we would already see that. It looks to me as though it's a debatable issue. But again, I haven't looked at the economics of the situation. With regard to electricity, at the moment, most of the electricity that's produced this way is going into the grid, because, you know, into the electricity grid that we all use, which is certainly probably one efficient way to use it. I'm not the world's expert on these things. I may have a Nobel Prize with Rick and Bob, but we certainly have limitations in our knowledge.
All right. How about putting on the meditation cap for a minute and give us maybe a prediction of the future? It could be fanciful. It could be maybe the World Cup in soccer, or maybe it's something very serious that you really want to drive home. What do you see 5 years out, 10 years, 50 years out? Do you have a prediction for us?
Well, the first thing is that I'm not a predictor. My science has never been what's called strategic. I think it's very important to realize that. I feel that I've made three nice contributions. None of these was on a research proposal. They were all puzzled about particular problems. I was puzzled about, as I said, about what was going on in the atmosphere of a carbon star. And it was a very simple experiment, and out of that experiment came this totally unexpected result that we discovered the C60 molecule, which was and the reason that it was some importance is that it was totally unexpected. It changed all our ideas about self-assembly, and it was a fundamental discovery rather than one for applications. I think my main worry with regard to science, and my main looking into the crystal ball, is to try to ensure something that I've already mentioned to you earlier in this program, is that in these days of very expensive research and also the limitations in funding of research, that we do not put all our eggs into the basket of applied or strategic science, okay? We know that energy is the big problem, therefore we certainly have to put a significant amount of our research funding into alternative energy sort of resources. However, my gut reaction is that we've already had a lot of focused research on, say, water splitting. But my guess is that if there is going to be a breakthrough, it might be totally in a totally unexpected area. Let me give you an example. The C60 molecule now has been shown to improve the electricity production in organic solar cells, plastic solar cells. In the future, we expect to see very inexpensive plastic solar cells attached to certain devices, for instance, to replace batteries. Okay? That would be very good because batteries are really expensive. And you and I know that for every battery that's used up, at least one or two other batteries just sit there not being used and thrown away long before they've lost their capacity when they could have been used. So in the future, these plastic solar cells look as though they have some, could be very useful. However, it turns out that in using C60 in these improves the electricity production by an order of magnitude, 5 to 10. Now, C60 was not discovered by a group looking out at how can you improve the electricity production in solar cells. It was produced by us, our group, when we were trying to understand the chemistry in a carbon star. So here's the point that I'm making, that you really do need to have a flexible research program, particularly in the universities, which allows young people, smart young people, to just follow their noses and say, wow, there's something interesting here, what's going on? They will then make unexpected discoveries, which later on can actually be applied somewhere else. The best example I know of this is the following one. Charlie Townes was a physicist, a very eminent physicist, who I think was at Columbia, trying to build a MASA, a microwave amplifier. He was thinking, how can I amplify a signal at very high frequencies, okay, in the microwave range? He built the MASA. Two Nobel Prize winners told him that it won't work, but he continued, he thought it all out, and he made it work. When that microwave amplifier was made, it then led people thinking, how can we make a light amplifier, a laser? 20 years later, the laser is being used in eye surgery.
Sir Harry Croteau, Nobel laureate, speaking to us from the summer home in England. Thank you so much. Always such an honor to have you with us. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
In this evolution of ever-changing organizations that we work in as business people, one I would say is adapt or die. And by that, I don't necessarily mean just, you know, give up your true beliefs or anything like that to adapt or die, but really be flexible and not get too stuck into where you are, or else not only will you die, but good innovation comes from being adaptable and flexible. My name is Andrea Marsh, and I am the lead business developer at Battelle for its Department of Homeland Security efforts.
So you decide. Has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.